Hello, welcome to another episode of MLB Talk. You are listening to UCLA Radio, and we have a very, very special guest today. The one and only Brett Saberhagen, 1985 Cy Young winner and World Series MVP for the Kansas City Royals, will be joining us shortly. I am Andrew, and I am joined, as always, by Emma, Brent, and Chase. There is so much exciting stuff going on today in baseball, but we are incredibly excited to have Mr. Saberhagen coming on to talk some baseball with us. What are you guys most excited to find out or just learn about the game?
For me, I definitely want to hear his account of the 1985 World Series. One of the most famous blown calls in baseball history occurred in Game 6 of that series. It was a series in which Brett was named MVP. He also became a father, all at the age of 21, so I'm intrigued to know how he was feeling just when in a 48-hour span you have one of the most exciting games in World Series history. He has a child and then goes on to throw a five-hit shutout at 21 and win World Series MVP.
Yeah, it's a really incredible story, and there's going to be so much to learn, you guys. We've had some issues with the podcast in the past couple of weeks, but this time we will definitely have it, so that way you guys can all listen to this interview for all of posterity and just enjoy it. Personally, I'm really interested in learning some, you know, getting some firsthand knowledge about pitcher arm injuries. That's obviously something I'm a little bit obsessed with, and I just really want to hear his take on what causes these types of things and how to prevent them.
You know, I read that he wasn't into sabermetrics. I don't know if that's true or not. Does that affect your view on the arm situation at all?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's mechanical, you know, it's anatomical. And so I think, like, the biggest thing is innings pitched. Like, Brett Saberhagen was totally a workhorse early on in his career. I was looking at earlier, I want to say that he had like 3 years where he pitched like 250 like regular season innings at least. And then, of course, you factor in the big postseason runs. And so it's going to be really fascinating to see what he has to say.
Have to ask, though, who his pick is for the NL Cy Young, if it's Greinke or, Arrieta. Like, it's just, I gotta know.
Yeah, we should definitely get his take on award picks. And speaking of which, I guess while we have a little bit of time here, we can get into some of those awards. We had the Manager of the Year, both of them announced today. And yesterday we had the Rookie of the Year. Unsurprisingly, in the National League, Chris Bryant was the Rookie of the Year. However, some people definitely debated whether Carlos Correa was going to win or not. However, I am going to cut that off as Mr. Saberhagen is waiting for us. Hello, Mr. Saberhagen. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. How's it going?
We are doing well. My name is Andrew, and I am joined by Emma, Brent, and Chase.
Hey.
You got the crew.
Yes, we have everybody here. We're so excited to have you on. Thank you so much again. So, we all saw your appearance on the Tonight Show. We know that's a bit different from this, but what was it like to be on primetime television and have the opportunity to punch a mock version of yourself?
Well, I've been on television enough, but primetime with Jimmy Fallon on the Tonight Show definitely get your nerves going. And I actually turned down them three times. Because I didn't want to really step on the Royals' toes right after them winning a World Series championship. I didn't want to do that. And then secondly, I get nervous when I got to do that type of stuff and didn't want to do that. So they finally convinced me that worst case scenario is that it's in front of a live audience, but it's taped, and we can redo it if we need to. So I ended up taking their offer and going on the show, and I'm glad I did because I don't think I'll ever get another chance to get on the Tonight Show again. But it was 30 years in between Tonight Shows. Johnny Carson 30 years ago, and then just recently with Jimmy Fallon, so it was pretty cool.
Wow, that's great. So what was it like to see the Royals, who haven't won a World Series in the past 30 years, win the World Series? And, you know, is there any part of you that's going to miss being one of the biggest icons of Kansas City baseball?
Well, that is a great question. I'm very excited, first off and foremost, for the new team. I know my guys are a great group of guys. They've been playing together for a long period of time, and they've come up through the ranks together, the majority of them. They've been through some tough times and some great times, and to see Kansas City, the fans, the organization, everybody that's involved with the team and all the players is just, it's a great honor, and it's great to see them. Part of me is a little bummed because now I have other people that have joined in the championship, but that's just a real, real small bit. And Kansas City is always going to be close to and dear to my heart. I have three kids that were all born there, and it's just great community, and it's I'm happy for them.
Hey, Brett, this is Chase here. Honor to have you on with us. I guess you just talking about the World Series and your kids gives me a great segue for my question. So in 1985, you were part of the Royals World Series team. Can you walk me through the 48 hours that was the Don Dechinger blown call at first base, followed by you becoming a father and then going out and throwing a five-hit shutout to win a World Series all at the age of 21?
Well, that morning, that was when Drew was born, before Game 6. I came into the clubhouse Game 6 giving out cigars. The call was later on in that game, and I think the call by Don Dechinger actually saved Jack Clark a lot of humiliation for dropping that foul ball at the first base dugout. It could have been ended the inning as well, so... it's unfortunate that Vince Coleman, who has great speed, can't outrun a tarp. We're good friends, and I always give him crap about that, getting run over by the tarp that rolls out about 1 second, 1 mile per hour. So there's a lot of things that went wrong for the Cardinals in that series, and a lot of good things happened for us in that series. But I think really what kind of calmed my nerves throughout prior to Game 7, because that was probably the most nervous I've ever been before a game, was actually having Drew, my first child, being born and taking me away from thinking about baseball for a little bit, a few hours here and a few hours there.
Hey, Brett, this is Brent. I have a question that kind of relates to what we were just talking about. Which would you say was your most proud accomplishment, winning World Series MVP that year, winning your two Cy Youngs, or pitching a no-hitter in 1991?
The first thing that is always on my number one list is definitely the World Series, because it's a team sport that I happen to be a part of. I'm very fortunate to have won one World Series. I always felt that I was very fortunate to put on a major league uniform for at least one day in the big leagues. My career actually lasted a lot longer than that. But it's something that you'll always cherish, because it's so tough to achieve that. So the individual awards are great, don't get me wrong, and that's how each individual gets paid. But the team, we're in the World Series, getting the postseason, being a part of that team concept, and winning the championship is something that I'll always cherish the most.
Brett, when you talk about, you know, being a team, obviously you valued being a part in the clubhouse throughout your career. You played with three very storied franchises in the Royals, Mets, and Red Sox. Played with a lot of famous guys, amongst them George Brett, Manny Ramirez. Who would you say was the best teammate you ever played with, and who was your favorite teammate that you ever, got along with in the clubhouse?
Well, I got along with so many guys. It's tough to really... pick one guy. I think coming up, George Brett made a big, huge impact on me, because he really kind of took myself and Mark Gubizaw under his wings. And probably Mark Gubizaw was the first guy that we both came up. I think he was 22 or 23 at the time. I was 20. And really coming up together, playing in the minor leagues together, knowing each other, made it a little easier for both of us, I believe, because we had stuff to do. We could hang out together. We roomed together on the road. So it was something that I think Gooby was probably comes to mind first, but I had so many great teammates in every place that I played, and I'm still in contact with teammates from each team that I played with. So, but Mark is married Janine and myself, one of her good girlfriends from high school, and he's a California now. we got him out of Philadelphia and into California. So Gooby and I still keep in contact with each other quite a bit.
Great. So I'd like to focus a little bit to the 2015 Royals. So Alex Gordon, Johnny Cueto, and Ben Zobrist are all free agents. Which of those players do you think the Royals need to re-sign the most, in your opinion, and why?
Well, first and foremost, Gordo in left field, he's done an unbelievable job. He's been a part of this nucleus for a long period of time. He's come up through the ranks. And so I would think that that would be your first guy that you really want to sign. Secondly, Zorbas, Ben has an unbelievable job coming over at the trade deadline and just playing multiple positions. He can do it all. He can run the bases. He can swing the bat for power, for for average. He moves runners. He puts down bunts when you need to. He's that all-around type of player that has been unbelievable for the Royals in their playoff run. Cueto, he's going to get paid pretty good money, but I think the Royals have some good young pitchers that could possibly come up and fill those shoes. Not the experience that Cueto has, but if you're going to spend some money, I think those two guys, position players, I would go after first.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've read that you were recently a baseball coach in Calabasas. Do you have any interest in helping the team in the future?
No. And I say that with a laugh. I enjoyed my time while I was there. It became what I really enjoyed doing. About 10% of what I really enjoyed doing was coaching. And there were so many other things that came along with it. I was in charge of three teams, freshman, JV, and the first team. And just a lot of things. By the time I got up to practice, I was just kind of mentally fried at times because I was concentrating on so many other things. It go from grades to parents to playing time to, getting coaches out there. The toughest part for me at the high school level coaching was having to cut a kid coming into trying to put the high school team. Very difficult, and that was one thing I hated doing. That was the first thing that I had to do, was tell a kid that he couldn't play baseball. But you couldn't have everybody on the team that just came out that wanted to play. So no to that. The answer would be no, that I'm not coming back to Calabasas or high school at any time soon.
Okay. I had to ask because, I've gotten a very strong sense of kinship from sort of the whole Royals organization over the past 2 years, and even the way some of the deadline trade acquisitions that the team had this year, it seemed like everyone sort of melded together very well, and I got, just a very strong sense of chemistry, even with past players.
Brett, the rest of our show is made up of California residents. I myself, I'm an East Coast kid from New Jersey. So West Babylon, New York, not too far from me. Could you please tell me a little bit about Brett Saberhagen's hidden fund? Because it seems like something that I would have loved to be able to go to as a kid.
Well, hidden fund, I opened up an entertainment center that was, you had batting cages in there, you had a pitching mound. I gave some lessons, I had some other guys that were giving lessons. It was at basically an arcade. It had a pizza shop that you can come and have birthdays with. They had laser tag and all the latest, newest games that you could want to go into an arcade and play the video games. It had an apparel shop up front with bats and uniform tops and stuff to purchase. But it didn't go away. I guess it was a bad location. I loved it. I would come in after hours, and I'd have friends over, and the kids would come up to New York from California, and it would be closed, and we'd just have a great old time. It was kind of like your own amusement park to go and use it from time to time.
All right, great. So for those who are just tuning in, we're here with Mr. Brett Saberhagen at UCLARadio.com. So we just have a few more questions for you. We're very interested here in understanding the nature of baseball injuries, particularly, pitching injuries. There's often a lot of debate about how pitchers should be handled and what is the ultimate cause of the injury. And I was curious, in your experience, if you found that stressful innings where you're throwing upwards of 30 pitches are more stress or more difficult than, say, just a heavy overall workload, whether it be in one start or over a whole season?
Well, there's a lot of money invested in these players nowadays, and so I think the younger players there kind of treat them with kid gloves, and they want to make sure that they're healthy year to year and not getting injured from throwing too many innings, too many pitches. So that's definitely changed from the time that I've come around. I think the one thing that is causing a lot of elbow problems, Tommy John surgeries, so on and so forth, is the breaking pitch. It's not the curveball necessarily, but it's more of the slider, the cutter, mm-hmm. that the guys are throwing that are throwing so hard and probably doing a little bit too much with their wrist that's causing the inflammation and the problems with Tommy John stuff. So, it's a fine line where you want those guys to be out there playing for you. But I think they did a good job with Harvey, ended up getting to play in the World Series and pitching in the World Series, even with the amount of innings that he accumulated this year.
So if you had any advice to young pitchers, you'd probably say try to avoid the slider cutter, sort of that type of pronation?
Correct, yeah. First, the fastball command, it's more important than velocity. And then having a changeup, a good changeup, is great. You need to have that off-speed pitch. Curveball does less damage to the elbow if you throw it properly. All the breaking pitches, as long as you throw them properly, you shouldn't have problems.
Okay, great. And I think we have one last question from Emma.
Oh, hi, Brett. It's Emma.
Hi, Emma.
Thank you again for coming on, by the way.
Absolutely.
So, the last question is just, what have you been doing recently, or what will you be doing just in an everyday kind of wondering?
Well, I've been doing a lot of tree work for a lot of different friends around the country. I've done some personal appearances, and now I'm getting ready to relax a little bit and enjoy the non-baseball season, which I'll be heading up to Mammoth shortly. I'll be coming to visit the Nehring family the night before Thanksgiving,
I
look forward to that. So seeing friends and spending some time with friends lately.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
it was
you.
An absolute honor to have you on our show, and we hope that you have a lovely holiday season, and maybe you think about listening in sometime in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me and asking.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Okay. That was Brett Saberhagen, World Series MVP in 1985 for the Kansas City Royals. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the hot stove, into qualifying offers, into everything that is the hectic Major League Baseball offseason. You are listening to MLB Talk at UCLA Radio. Welcome back to MLB Talk. I hope you all enjoyed that interview as much as we did. It was just awesome. I don't have other words right now. A little bit shell-shocked. Anyways, you are listening to UCLA Radio. If you'd like to call us and talk about anything or baseball, which would be great because there's lots of good baseball stuff going on, you can call us at 310-794-9348. So the hot stove is burning, you guys. Don't get too close. Don't want to get any third-degree burns or anything. Huge trades, potential happenings everywhere. Let's start with sort of the first big trade that happened last week. Andrelton Simmons traded from the Atlanta Braves to the Angels for Eric Ibar, Sean Newcomb, and a couple of other pieces. The Angels also received a relief pitcher in return. I think this trade has some people, I think it's a divisive trade. Some people are really sort of feeling the opposite of what I feel about this trade. Do you think it's something smart for the Angels to do? Do you think it was a good step for the Braves in rebuilding? Or is it just kind of a mess for both teams?
I honestly didn't really like the trade in particular for either team. I think when a team's rebuilding, I do think it's important that you trade away assets. However, I do think every team needs one or two building blocks. And you look at Simmons, he's signed for what, 5 years for a little over $50 million?
Yeah, 53 to be exact.
So I mean, even if he were to hit 200, defense alone, he's that contract's being paid for. I think in trying to rebuild, the Braves gave up a extremely team friendly contract, arguably one of the most team friendly contracts in baseball. And I also think you alienated the one super, not even superstar, but one, you know, well-known player you have left in Freddie Freeman. I think if you're him, you definitely want out of Atlanta at this point. You're the only person left from that playoff team a few years ago. He already is.
They
right?
still have Nick Markakis, who I was going to say, but I mean, not from that playoff team. There's still some guys left there, but.
And I think, yeah, I agree. And I think from the Angels standpoint, you know, to me, I think Simmons is good, but I don't know how much better, you know, a very defense first player makes a team like this. I think the problem was there wasn't a lot of lineup protection outside of Cole Calhoun and Trout. I mean, Pujols hit a lot of homers, but we saw on base and average both very low, especially for him. And this is a team who, quite frankly, the rotation I think has been an issue for a while. They have been able to score runs. And, you know, Newcomb was the number 25 prospect in baseball at the end of the year, the consensus number one prospect in the Angels organization. And I don't know if he was worth giving up for a guy in Simmons who, while the glove is great, I just don't know how much of an impact the bat's going to need.
Personally, I love this trade for the Angels. I think it's okay for the Braves. And simply put, a young shortstop who has proven value, has proven upside, and is signed on a team-friendly long-term deal that takes you into his physical prime is just a no-brainer, especially for a contending team. Everyone I've talked to about this has always mentioned, oh, Sean Newcomb, he's so good. It's such a big price tag to give up. I tend to disagree with this for two reasons. Firstly, the Angels are a contending team. They need to win now, and Sean Newcomb is not going to help them win now. That's just a fact. 2 years from now, this team could be very different. Albert Pujols could really be dragging the team down in terms of just cap space and whatnot. And secondly, we have seen time and time again amazing pitching prospects go down and never come back. The one I'm going to mention right now, who's and this is not for comparison. This is only to show as an example. Dylan Bundy, who was picked, I think, second overall by the Orioles a couple of years back. I was as sure as of any player as I've ever been that Dylan Bundy was going to make a huge impact in the majors. And to this day, because of injuries and just velocity diminishing, he is still in the minor leagues. I want to say he's in the Arizona Fall League. And it just really hasn't panned out. And that's nothing against him. It's nothing against Sean Newcomb, who I think is a great pitcher and it really has a lot of potential. I just think it's the right move for the Angels.
I think it's an okay trade. The thing is, the Angels' biggest concern this season was getting a guy who could bat leadoff, because last year they shuffled through, I want to say it was like their whole team at one point was batting leadoff, like they would rotate. And Ibar, him and Andrelton Simmons, obviously Andrelton's the much better player, especially defensively. But on the batting side, I mean, they posted similar OPSs. I don't think it's the move to put him over the top. I think they still have to do one more big move where I thought of this today. Had they traded as well for Nick Markakis, he would have been a perfect leadoff guy there. But, yeah.
I think that is, yeah, that is a fair point. They definitely have some room to work. But I think the Angels can do that. They absolutely have the opportunity. For the Braves, I'm a little bit confused about this trade. I think you do have to trade assets. I totally agree with what you said, Chase, about that. I just feel like Andrelton Simmons is the exact type of asset you want for a rebuilding team.
Totally agree.
Team-friendly deal. It's not going to hurt you. You're locking him up in his prime. And it's such a critical position on the field. It's just a little hard to see them doing this, especially after signing Nick Markakis last year. I think there's definitely some kind of conflict in the Braves' office. They aren't fully committed to maybe they are fully committed to this rebuild, but I don't think they're thinking of it the right way. And to me, this wasn't a huge mistake. You acquired something good. But the truth is, pitching prospects, even good ones, are kind of a dime a dozen. And a player like Andrelton Simmons is not. He hit 17 home runs 2 years ago. And if he does something like that, then you're talking about top three shortstop in the majors, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll also just, you know, a guy I want to bring up just that shows the uncertainty of Newcomb is Jameson Taillon in the Pirate system.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think it was, and I know this is a very obscure thing to bring up, but when was the last World Baseball Classic? 2013-ish, give or take?
Yeah, 2013.
I mean, I remember watching that, and Taillon pitched for Team Canada and was just throwing gas against Team USA. And, I mean, no offense to Team Canada, but USA was one of the favorites, rightfully so. It's America's sport. And they just ran over us with Taillon. But like you said, you never know, you know, and even talking to Brett Saberhagen before, a lot of these young guys, it's just one curveball away, one, you know, snap slider away, and that's it. It's a busted trade.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this is one of those trades where a couple of years from now we'll really be able to say, okay, this worked out for this reason or that reason. But it definitely, in my opinion, looks like a little bit of an Angels win for now.
Everyone from where I live in Florida is a Braves fan. They all hate the trade. So
yeah, that's the Braves fans really hate that trade, and I think that tells you a lot. So moving on to what I think is probably the most interesting trade so far, the Red Sox traded for Padres closer Craig Kimbrel, deepening their bullpen, but also giving a significant haul to the Padres. They get top outfield prospect Manuel Margot. Javier Guerra, not to be confused with the former closer of the Dodgers, who also has very high ceiling. And then two other prospects who I'm not going to mention just because they're not in the top 100. Dave Dombrowski is, of course, the new Red Sox president. This is sort of his first move. Do you guys think that this is going to turn out to be an overwhelming mistake? Or is this really a sign that maybe the Red Sox are closer to contention than we think?
I personally like the trade for the Red Sox only because I think to some degree, yes, I do agree with what you said. They did give up a big prospect haul. But I think in training, is it Margot who was the outfielder?
Yeah.
You know, I think you're trading from an area of strength there.
Definitely.
They have Betts, Bradley, and Castillo, who are all three young, you know, under team control outfielders. For whatever reason, if they decide to put Hanley out there, that's another outfielder. And I just think, and look, anytime a guy comes from the National League to the American League, I automatically become a little bit hesitant. I think Johnny Cueto is the best example for that, even though Kimbrel's a closer, just where a guy who could be so dominant in one league could struggle at times in the other. But I think when you look, if Koji Urahara suddenly becomes healthy, all of a sudden the Red Sox biggest weakness, their bullpen, becomes a very, very big strength, where that is a dynamic 8-9 duo. And, you know, I think we also need to keep in mind that they have money. They're going to go out and get starting pitchers to fortify their rotation. And I think when you have just a lights-out closer to go with, presumably, you got to think they'll be in on the Cueto's, Price, Zimmerman's, et cetera. I think it could shape up to be a really good offseason. And I don't think Dombrowski totally gutted the farm system because you still have the likes of Yoan Moncada, your top prospect, where there's reinforcements on the way if need be.
You know, I don't think this was a bad trade for the Red Sox. The thing is, though, they need starting pitchers. They had a horrible bullpen. They had, I want to say it was Gene Machi was the closer at one point.
That's right.
And, I mean, he was bad enough that the Giants let him go. But when your starting five is Clay Buchholz, Joe Kelly, Wade Miley, Rick Porcello, and then Eduardo Rodriguez, who I actually like, but, I mean, those the first four guys, you could either get a guy who's going to have an ERA over five, maybe six, or a guy who can have an ERA around three. So
it's a rotation of three and four starters.
Exactly.
That Porcello contract, I said it last year when we talked about it, is horrific.
Yeah, it's truly terrible. And I'm sort of middle of the road here. We're going to have to see what they do in the free agent market, obviously. You're definitely right, you know. And this is something I expect Houston to do as well. When you have a loaded farm system, and the Red Sox do, or did, this is the type of thing you can do. And the only question I have is, like, you know, Craig Kimbrel is the best reliever. Like, I'm okay saying that, pretty much. Like, I think objectively, like, he's pretty freaking close. Like, you got to put him at least top three. So at least you're getting the best of the best. But if I'm trading those types of guys, I want someone who's going to have a larger role, and just because that allows them to impact the game more. I just think that's, you know, you look at that at any sport. Like, in my opinion, this is kind of like trading for, like, the best kicker and, like, giving away, like, a good wide receiver or something. It's a little bit out there. And I think if they don't compete this year, it's going to look really bad.
You know, one thing, though, I think a lot of people forget is that Craig Kimbrell is still relatively young. He's 27, which, I mean, if I don't want to say that every reliever is going to be Mariano Rivera and pitch well into their early 40s. But if you do have him for another, I'll just say, 10 years of successful closing, I mean, that could lead to a couple World Series wins, especially when those are the hardest innings, is the 7, 8, 9, especially in the playoffs.
Let me ask you guys this, just because we're talking about how I think we all agree this trade and our perception of it is very dependent on what else they do this offseason. You know, if this is the start of something bigger, then it's a good move. If it's the only move, meh. The Red Sox have the number 12th pick in the draft, which means it's not top 10 protected. So if they do go out and sign, you know, pretty much any major free agent left out there, they're giving up that first round pick. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they make two signings, so that could be giving up their first two-round pick. So I guess my question is, one, do you think Dave Dombrowski should try to keep these picks? And two, do you think he'll be able to retool the farm system as well as the Ben Cherringtons and the Theo Epsteins of the Red Sox front office have done over the past, really, you know, 10, 11 years?
I've always got the sense that Dombrowski is a little more aggressive. He did, of course, trade David Price at the end of his Tigers campaign, so to speak, but I don't think that's a priority for him. He seems very much like he's in a win now mode. That's what this tells me. So I'm not sure if you sign two restrict. I don't know if you have to give up your second round pick. I don't think it works like that. Well, we should get like the research department.
No, you do. It's so it's
yeah
yeah. You yeah. Just you just
so
keep
then
giving
is the
him
compensation
up
pick in the compensation round.
Is the
because
what do you mean?
All right, if you sign a free agent who's offered a qualifying offer, then the team that lost that player gets a pick in the compensation round, which follows the first round. So you get what I'm saying, essentially.
I don't think it's a compensation pick anymore. I just think you get that team's first-round pick.
Well, no, it's never been that way. You get the compensation. It comes right – I mean, it's essentially a first-rounder because, like, the original team's first-rounder disappears. It becomes a compensation pick. Because basically it would be unfair if some team that was at the bottom of the league signed a player that got a qualifying offer, and then the team that originally had that player gets the number two pick. That would be messed up.
No, but I think that's why it's top 10 protected, though. If you have a top 10 pick, you lose nothing. So that's why, like, just going on a tangent, like the best example is like the Indians a few years ago. When they signed Swisher and Michael Bourne, they were both attached to qualifying offers, but it amounted to giving up a second and third round pick because they were top 10 protected.
Ah.
And that was when, like, I want to say when the Pirates didn't – did the Pirates originally draft Mark Apple?
No.
Maybe?
No, it's always Houston.
No, it was the Pirates drafted him,
we're talking
and
about,
then he
yeah.
went
so,
back to
So
Stanford.
The big thing with that was the Pirates got a – compensation pick in the top 10 for not signing Apple in the number two slot. And then the big thing was that the Mets then got pushed back to the 11th pick. And it was, well, if you're a Mets fan, how do you feel about this?
Yeah. So we should get your boy, John Harris, Joe Harris.
John's been having a long day. He'll be off for stats
whatever,
for the week.
Whatever. John Harris, you got to do this to earn your credit. All right. I kind of lost track of what we were going with there.
We were talking about the Kimbrel trade and Dombrowski.
Right. Well, you want to let's flip side. This is totally one of those things that it's too premature to give him a grade. However, AJ Preller gets a big A+ for this fantastic trade. And what I love about this is I don't think he's going to rest on his laurels. I think he's going to amass prospects and then trade them and acquire more major league players and still try to have some form of a contending team this year. Do you guys think that's what he's going to do, or am I just crazy?
You know, I feel like this happens a lot in baseball. We'll see AJ Preller do a trade like this, and then the Padres will just be utter crap next year, and then they'll be utter crap the second year and utter crap the third year, and then they'll get fired and we'll say, why did they ever hire AJ Preller? I mean, he destroyed the team. So I don't know. That's just something I feel like I've noticed in the past few years.
I also think their offseason will be interesting in that they still do have a lot of assets where if they want to trade them, I think they could get some good pieces back. Tyson Ross has been probably a top 10, 12 lefty in baseball over the past 2 years. I think you can get a lot for them. I think it'll be interesting with the qualifying offers that the Padres gave out. I think you definitely will get a pick in return for Justin Upton. However, I just don't see a team giving up a pick for Ian Kennedy. I mean, this guy has been the epitome of a average big league pitcher since he left the Diamondbacks and even towards the end of his Diamondbacks tenure. So I think, you know, if you're Ian Kennedy, you really got to hope that a team that was crappy last year is interested in you. And if you're the Padres, I don't know if I would bank on necessarily getting that pick back, because I believe there is a waiting period where it's like, if you wait until after X date, the qualifying offer pick goes away. I want to say it's like sometime in May. And Kennedy's a Scott Boras client. Honestly, I can see that happening.
So I think I need to re-ask my question. You know, last year, Preller was kind of like hard to tell what was going on. And then all of a sudden he acquired all these players and they had sort of a very shallow farm system, but suddenly like closer to a good major league team. Do you guys expect anything like that from Preller? Because personally, for me, he's already traded Joaquin Benoit and he acquired all these prospects with Craig Kimbrel. You know, you could easily get at least two major league guys with some different groupings of these prospects and fill some holes. And maybe Ian Kennedy comes back. He gave up 31 home runs, which was horrendous, but there's some reason for positive outlook there. I personally, I think he's one of the most interesting general managers out there, and I think he's always trying to do something crazy, and he's not really a rebuilding guy. He wants to compete now.
I think one thing he needs to do is go out and get an outfielder. And when I say an outfielder, I mean, don't worry about how he hits. Get someone you could plug in center field. Get someone who can go in between Will Myers and Matt Kemp, because I think we can all agree this team, one of this team's biggest Achilles heel was, you know, they rolled out Myers, Kemp, and Upton and just said, you know what, they're going to hit the crap out of the ball. We'll deal with the defense. But they didn't hit the crap out of the ball, and, you know, balls were landing left and right. I think Preller will continue to wheel and deal. You know, I think the problem is outside of Tyson Ross and maybe Shields, I just don't know how many desirable assets are really left that will get you a significant amount of prospects that would warrant giving them up. I think Andrew Cashner, I wouldn't sell low on him after last year.
Me neither.
You know, I don't know if anyone's going to take Will Myers. I think a lot of the problem is they have a lot of sell low candidates right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, he also inherited a lot of guys that I don't necessarily think have panned out. Jed Groko, really highly touted prospect, hasn't really done too much. Yonder Alonso's just been injury after injury, and that's not Preller's fault, but the reality is, you know, maybe you start to decide you want to pull the plug on those guys and start to give young guys a chance.
But, you know, one thing I don't understand with this wheel and deal concept, though, is when he first got there, I'm pretty sure this was him, he traded Trey Turner, who's probably going to be in the top two or three for the NL Rookie of the Year this year, for Will Myers, who, although has unbelievable talent. I mean, he's had wrist problems ever since that collision with Delmon Young in the outfield in Tampa. So I think he needs to either devote to one practice, because if he does continue to wear, he'll get veterans, if you want to call Will Myers a veteran. But he'll get those guys like Justin Upton, Will Myers, and then they'll stay in mediocrity. I mean, they're not going to beat the Dodgers, and they're probably not going to beat the Giants. So, and then when you have the NL Central that tough, it's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs.
You know, I want to go back to Jed Jerko for a second. He actually kind of bounced back in the second half of the year, also started playing shortstop. Didn't do great at shortstop, maybe even terribly. But I'm very curious about that. And I think Will Myers, we all kind of forgot that he was really good for a year. I totally agree with what you said about the sell low candidates. That I would hold on to them, see what happens. Will Middlebrooks is the one guy I'm just like, forget about it. Just forget about it. There's no chance with him. Other than that, you don't see anyone else doing this in baseball. And that's what I love about it. That's what makes it exciting. I don't want more competitors in the division of my favorite team, but I would definitely like to see AJ Preller's mad science experiment work out and yield a good team. So we'll have to see what happens with that. Elsewhere, you know, the Mariners have also been very, very active under their new – is he a president, Jerry DePoto? No, I think he's just the GM. Well, anyhow, they acquired Leonis Martin, who was very, very upset with the Rangers for being left off the postseason roster in exchange for Tom Wilhelmsen, and then they also traded some other parts. How do you guys feel about the trade for the Rangers, who suddenly have this very deep bullpen and good starting staff, good offense? And most importantly, do you guys think the Mariners are actually getting to a place where they can contend?
One second. Let me just get up some teams' depth charts. I do like the trade from the Mariners in the standpoint of Martin is a very, very plus defensive outfielder. And I think, you know, roaming the outfield that is Safeco Field, I think that'll be big for them. I also like it just because you have, you know, Martin and Seth Smith are both lefties. You have, and Franklin Gutierrez, a tailor-made platoon partner for both of them. Obviously, he can't play either every day, but I like the movement on the flip side for the Rangers. You know, I think a lot of people don't recognize that how do you say his last name?
Wilhelmsson.
You know, when he's moved back into the closer's role in the second half, pitched very effectively. You can never have enough hard-throwing righties in your bullpen. And, you know, I think Martin was solid, but, you know, ultimately if they're going to try to play Joey Gallo in the outfield a little more, I just don't know if there was necessarily that much of a role for him anymore. So you traded from an area of strength to bolster an area that I wouldn't say was a weakness in their bullpen, but you made it a little bit stronger.
And I feel like the Rangers have consistently just had a bunch of leadoff hitter type guys like Rougned Odor, Leonis Martin, Elvis Andrews.
DeShields.
Even Rougned Odor, we haven't got to really see him, but he doesn't have a ton of power. I mean, I don't think...
Oh, quite the contrary, my friend. 15 home runs this year. Rougned Odor is awesome. He's a fancy owner here. I thought he was out
the whole year again with the shoulder.
No, that's Yerkson Profar, my friend.
I'm sorry. I was thinking Yerkson Profar.
Odor is the guy whose brother's name is also Rougned Odor.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that is an amazing
and the Rangers
backstory.
And the Rangers signed him. But continue.
Sorry, I think that just kind of threw me off. I just like. That's fantastic.
I'll just say, you know, something real quick. I think the Rangers surprised a lot of people by winning the AL West this year. I'm sure we'll touch on it, but Jeff Banister, first-year manager, won manager of the year. I mean, I'm looking at this team right now for next year, though. I mean, you're looking at a lineup where, you know, even if you get a 75% Josh Hamilton, when you pair him with DeShields, Shin-Soo Chu, Mitch Moreland, who low-key had a very strong year at the plate in terms of power, had about 25 homers, 85 ribbies, Odor and Andrews up the middle, Beltre, hopefully a healthy Profar, Prince Fielder, and then a rotation of Hamels, Yu Darvish, and Derek Holland as a 1-2-3. That team all of a sudden becomes scary. Doesn't look like they can hear me, so I'll keep going.
No. It ain't like that, man.
Just making sure.
I totally agree. They have a fantastic offense. I do, you know, I'm going to keep saying this. I know everyone disagrees with me. Adrian Beltre is declining. It's happening fast. And I think that's kind of their big hole, but truthfully, they need to worry more about the pitching. The offense is going to be fine.
If Adrian Beltre is your hole, though, that's a good hole to have.
Exactly. It's great. I don't think they have a huge offensive problem. And Joey Gallo is obviously
the guy I left out.
Yeah, so I love where that team is going. I think the Manager of the Year award was very well deserved, especially just everything in the second half was fantastic for them. So it's a very exciting team, and I think the division, of course, has been competitive. I think it's going to continue to be competitive. Do you guys even think there's a possibility that all five teams in that division next year will be good?
Oakland, I don't think, will be good. Anaheim will finish above 500. The Rangers, the Astros, the fifth team?
The Mariners.
The Mariners. I think a lot of that is dependent on, one, if the Mariners re-sign Iwakuma and if they trade James Paxton for Brett Gardner, which has been a big rumor trade. I would like that a lot for Seattle, personally. I think, you know, having a true leadoff hitter would go a long way there. And I think on the flip side for Houston, you have money to spend. Go get Chris Davis.
Ooh. Oh, that would be crazy. I had a really crazy trade idea for Houston that I can't remember. But they have all these assets. I don't think they should sign anyone in free agency. I think if they want to acquire a major league player, they should just trade some of their assets. They just have so many guys. That team, I think, if they do the right things. Oh, I was thinking it was someone. They need a third baseman, isn't it? Yeah. Well, I guess Crush Davis can kind of play third, but that's not preferable. I really like that, though. That would be insane. Anyhow, the Astros, I think that division is probably going to be the best division in baseball, in my opinion.
NL Central.
No? NL Central until proven otherwise.
I don't know. I think some of the teams in that division are going to regress next year. I'm sort of interested about what the Cardinals are going to do. I think that offense is going to have issues. And also, I just don't, you know, I don't remember a time ever where you've had three teams in one division all come within two or three wins of 100. So, yeah, we'll get stats department on it. We already talked about him, but Joe Harris, sorry.
John.
John needs to get back here and figure things out for us.
John.
Anyways, are there any other trades that we wanted to discuss that we may have overlooked, or is it time for our other segments?
I just have to mention that Don Mattingly actually got a third place vote for Manager of the Year,
and Bruce Bochy only got one. Like, we should talk more about voting next week. There's a lot of stuff, but
I'll touch on something one real quick
that we
haven't talked about. First three players ever accepted qualifying offers.
Oh yeah, of course.
So the three that accepted them were Matt Wieters, Brett Anderson, and Colby Rasmus. I'll just say my opinion real quick. I think for Wieters, despite him being a Boris client, I think it makes a lot of sense for him to gamble on himself. You know, this was a guy who I think pre-injury, I think we would all agree, consensus top five catcher in baseball. Sure. If he could, you know, just get through healthy with a year, get through a year healthy, I think he's in for a big payday. If not, you're making $16 million a year. Don't feel too bad for you. You know, I think if I was Brett Anderson, $16 million is probably the most Brett Anderson ever gets. He hasn't been healthy in a while, if ever, though, so maybe you take advantage of that and try to leverage it into a multi-year deal. And I think Colby Rasmus cashed in big time for his postseason. You know, yes, he had 25 homers, had a great postseason, but at the end of the day, he still hit like 230, struck out a lot, and I think he leveraged that into probably being the highest paid Astro by quite a bit now, I would say.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of big contracts on that team. I think the common thread you can see between all three of those guys is they all think they have something extra to prove, and so it's kind of good that the system is working a little bit better. Also, I'd like to note that the Mets dodged a major bullet. Daniel Murphy did not accept his qualifying offer for reasons to me that are unknown. All right, we're going to rush through our last couple segments here. I want to do Tweet of the Week real quick. Tweet. Do you guys want to go? Or I've got one right
here.
I'll go.
So mine's a Facebook status, but it was on Keith Law's Twitter. It was an old guy. He hasn't covered baseball in 10 years, and he put on Facebook, this is in reference to David Ortiz, "I'd vote for him, but the Baseball Writers of America took my vote away. After the youngins F it up this year, maybe we get reinstated." So I thought that was pretty great.
That's unbelievable.
Mine is also about David Ortiz. It is from Bill Barnwell. And the tweet is, "Remember when the Red Sox signed Dave Nilsson, Jeremy Giambi, and David Ortiz to DH before 2003? Thought Ortiz was the least exciting option."
It's so funny how things turn out. You really can't predict ball. Speaking of which, my tweet is from @can'tpredictball. "If you went 2 for 5 with a home run in a single every day, you would hit 400, and with 162 homers and 2004 bonds would still have a higher OPS than you." I think is like the craziest thing I've ever heard. That's just insane. Really puts in perspective how good Bonds was in his prime.
Bonds will be coming up in our next segment. Don't you worry.
Okay, great. Well, speaking of which, it's time for our baseball WWE Match of the Week. Take it away, Chase.
All righty, folks. So as we just touched on, one of the most famously accused players of taking steroids in baseball history, David Ortiz of my beloved Boston Red Sox, JK, announced he will be retiring at the end of the 2016 season. So in his honor, this week's Match of the Week, we will be having an 8-man baseball bat match, where each man in the ring is armed with a baseball bat and the last man standing wins. But the catch is that in order to be a contestant, you not only have to be retired from the game of baseball, but you also had to have been linked to steroids, much like David Ortiz. Red Sox fans, take note. So, first contestant, you have Mark, real men cry when they admit they were on the juice, McGuire. Number two, Sammy, the second coming of Michael Jackson, Sosa. If you don't get that one, I'll explain it after the show. Just Google what he looks like now. Three, Barry, that 100-pound weight gain from the Pirates to the Giants was all natural, Bonds. Number four, Jose, if I didn't shoot my finger off, I'd probably be flipping you the bird, Canseco. 5, Manny, guess we do know what Manny was doing inside of the green monster, Ramirez. 6, Gary, managed to play for 8 teams and is still one of the least liked players in baseball, Sheffield. 7, Roger, guess my veins bulging at the sight of Piazza makes a lot more sense now, Clemens. And rounding out the group, Jason, how did I become a good guy and future MLB manager, Giambi? So, the roids have been injected. The bats have been handed out. The juice is running through the blood. Everyone's got a bat. They're taking hacks. Who you guys got?
First, just props on all those nicknames you did. You knocked it out of the park this week. Well done. I'm going to take Gary Sheffield. Dude has a mean streak. Very underrated. I think he is going to be gunning for everyone out there.
He did call Joe Torre a racist, so I do know that he's got a mean streak.
He's an intense dude.
However, I am going to go with Manny just because it never seemed like there was a lot going on up there. So I just think, you know, he's down for whatever happens.
So in this group, I think you have the really heavy hitters, and then you also have the guys who can just take a beating. And yeah. You're saying Manny Ramirez belongs in that group.
Not even take a beating. I just think it's like, Manny, you hit so-and-so with that. Okay.
All right. Well, fair enough.
I got to go with Canseco. If you shoot your own finger off, I think you can take a baseball bat to, like,
the head. Anywhere. All right. I don't think we're going to be able to come up with a consensus winner here, but very well done. I also think Roger Clemens is, well, he's a pitcher, I guess, so he wouldn't win. Never mind.
Scratch. He's an angry Texan, man. Never count him out.
Yeah, I just think if it was more of a general combat situation, I would take him. But, you know, the bat swing is a huge factor. Not going to say Barry Bonds. That would be too homerish of me. But very well done. That was excellent. I really enjoyed that. I would love to come back to just some of those guys and those nicknames. Excellent. All right. So we only have a couple minutes here. Any last things you guys want to bring up? Trades or teams? Oh, well, let's talk about the Brandon Crawford extension real quick. He was extended today for 6 years, $75 million. That buys out his last 2 arbitration years and his first 4 years of free agency, meaning that he will be eligible for free agency at the age of 34 in 2021. The Giants over the past couple of years have had a knack of locking up their young guys early. You guys are, well, not young guys. They're team-controlled players early. Do you think that this was in the vein of the good signings they've had with such as Buster Posey, Madison Bumgarner, Hunter Pence? Or is this going to fall in that sort of tough group with Matt Cain, who really hasn't lived up to his 5 years and $125 million?
I think it'll be good, but when Brandon Crawford regresses next year, everyone's going to trash it. They're going to say that he had one good year, and they're going to bash it. I don't think his stats are good on a little bit, but 15 homers, 70 ribbies. I can see that over the next few years.
Yeah, I think it's $12.5 million for a guy who will be a top 10 player at his position for the foreseeable future, at least through the life of the contract. He's a Bruin. He's my boy. I projected him to have 20 homers last year. He did, so he made me look really smart amongst my friends. And just to put it in perspective, between Crawford and Madison Bumgarner invested a combined $110 million for the two over 10 years, like 5 for each. Kudos to Sabian. Kudos to the Giants. God bless.
Yeah, I'm extremely happy with this deal. I think that, you know, the only thing that's going to be a problem is it eventually when he regresses, you know, is it going to get to his head? He just has to make sure that he doesn't let this affect him because he did have an outstanding year, very hot in the first half, and I wouldn't expect exact same production. But for the time being, he's probably the best shortstop in the National League, and to lock him up for this kind of price is fantastic.
Oh, what a difference a week makes when we say that.
What do you mean?
Well, we literally had the argument last week, Crawford or Simmons.
Oh,
what a
yeah,
difference a week
absolutely.
Makes.
It's not doesn't mean anything, but it's nice to have the best shortstop in the National League.
Corey Seager's going to be the best one starting next year.
Okay. Well,
anyway.
Right now. All right. This has been MLB Talk. Thank you so much for listening. A big shout out to Mr. Brett Saberhagen for coming on our show today. We will be back next week, same time, same channel. You have been listening to UCLA Radio, and thank you for swinging by.